Morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. And so my name is Yokai Katanda. I'm from Ontario, Canada, at Trent University. I'm doing my PhD there. And I've been working on a project that is a collaboration with our colleagues at the University of Guelph. And we are working with interseeded cover crops to see if there are any options that would be viable for Ontario. So Ontario climate is typically, like most people know, this is Canada, so very long cold winters and short growing seasons. And so incorporating cover crops in corn systems is very challenging. And one option would be interseeding, so you're growing these cover crops into standing corn so that there is time for establishment. So the picture here shows an interseeder we purchased from Penn State that we used for this project. And here, as you can see, it's being used to seed cover crops at Trent University. So for the purposes of this talk, I am going to focus on the benefits of cover crops on soil organic matter additions to soil and what happens to the active soil organic matter pools and all the parameters that are associated with the dynamic pools of soil organic matter. But there are so many cover crop benefits that I'm sure a lot of people in this room know. But soil organic matter is very important for improving soil health in terms of its effect on soil structure or, in general, soil quality. And so for the dynamic pool that I focused on, it was the particulate organic matter, which is the 53 to 2,000 micrometer particle size. And we measured the carbon and the nitrogen in that fraction, as well as the microbial biomass content of the soils that were sampled either in the fall at grain harvest or in the spring, 3 to 4 weeks following cover crop termination with glyphosate. So the objectives of the part of the study I'm going to discuss today were to look at what changes take place after interseeding cover crops for one season in terms of the soil microbial biomass, carbon and nitrogen, the beta-glucosidases or dehydrogenase enzyme activities, or particulate organic matter, carbon and nitrogen, and I also looked at microbial community structure. So for beta-glucosidases, we chose that because it is a key enzyme that plays a role in carbon cycling. Then dehydrogenase is important as it can be used as an indicator for microbial biomass. It indicates the active microbial cells. The microbial community structure was analyzed using biolog plates, echo plates. These are 96 well plates that contain 31 different carbon sources. So the profiles of utilization of those different carbon sources will tell you the diversity of the microbial community or functional diversity that you have in that sample. So we had a randomized complete block design. We had three different sites over two seasons, but I'm going to discuss four site years because we had failure in two of our sites. And then we had four blocks at each of the sites, as well as four cover crop treatments. So our cover crops were annual ryegrass and red clover, as well as a mixture of the two. And all these were compared to a bare control. And we did statistical analysis by just doing a basic ANOVA using the PROC-LIMIX procedure in SAS. And we compared our means using the Tukey-Cramer method at the 95% confidence level. So the three sites, I know they look like they're 20 kilometers apart from there, but they're like the largest distance there is like 400 kilometers between Peterborough, which is, I'm going to call it Trent for this talk, that's where the university is, and then Ellora and Ridgetown. So those are the three sites that we have, and I've included a table here to show the some selected properties of the soils at the different sites. The samples that we used for analysis were collected from the 0 to 15 centimeter depth. And like I said before, in the fall, we sampled at grain harvest, and in the spring, we sampled 3 to 4 weeks after cover crop termination. those are the seeding rates, and we just followed recommendations from the provincial agricultural organization. So I mentioned that I'm going to present on four site years, and I included this graph. I don't want to dwell on it, but it just shows you the variability in our climate in terms of precipitation and temperatures. And we did lose, sorry, I'm trying to find the mouse. Okay. So we did lose some cover crop biomass at this site in 2015. This is Ridgetown, and where the cursor is where you would typically seed your cover crops. So we did not get significant biomass because during the time of seeding, there was a short drought there at that site. So we did not get anything. There was no point in me analyzing those soil samples. As well as in Trent, 2016, we did not have any establishment of red clover, but annual ryegrass surprisingly did well. But because we lost that other cover crop, I could not compare ryegrass only. It didn't make sense. So I included also the background biomass yield that we got at the four site years that I'm going to be talking about. And as you can see, we had quite a variable amount of biomass that we got at the different sites at different sampling times. But as I said before, in 2015, we got red clover doing much better at both the sites that I'm talking that we analyzed. But in 2016, red clover did not do so well. It wasn't competitive in a drought year. And I calculated the amount of the potential contributions of carbon or nitrogen from the different cover crops by just using the carbon content or nitrogen content of the tissues and the yield of the, and this is above ground biomass yield of the different cover crops. So I'm not going to get into this, but as you can see, it's quite variable. But where we had significant amounts of biomass, we also did end up getting a lot more contributions of nitrogen or carbon because, well, it follows and calculating from those values anyways. And so for all the parameters that we analyzed, and these are not limited to the ones that I'm talking about today, we also analyzed potentially mineralizable nitrogen, we analyzed basal respiration, flash of carbon dioxide on rewetting of air-dry soils. I'm forgetting some of them. We had a multitude of analyses that we did on these samples to try and see if there were any dynamic or short-term parameters that could be used to indicate the short-term changes in soil quality over just one season. But of all these parameters, there were no significant differences between our cover crop treatments and the control. So we went a step further and looked at whether the amount of biomass that we got from our cover crops was correlated to the different soil parameters that we were interested in. So for the microbial biomass, we did find significant positive correlations between the cover crop biomass and microbial biomass carbon, but nitrogen did not show any correlation with the cover crop yield. Also, the microbial carbon to nitrogen ratio was positively correlated with the cover crop biomass yield. And for the enzyme activities, we saw significant positive correlations between the amount of cover crop biomass and beta-glucosidase activity, regardless of sampling time. So for both the fall and the spring, there were significant correlations with cover crop biomass. And also for the same enzyme, there was a significant correlation with the amount of carbon from the cover crops. And for dehydrogenase activity, this was pretty constant, and we didn't see a lot of activity compared to the control, but we did see some correlation with cover crop carbon content. And then the particulate organic matter carbon followed the same pattern as the enzymes and the microbial biomass carbon. It was positively correlated with cover crop biomass yield. But interestingly enough, the particulate organic nitrogen was highly negatively correlated with cover crop biomass yield. And my suspicion is that there was improved mineralization, and so you would lose most of your nitrogen from the particulate organic pool going into the mineral pool. So for microbial community diversity, which I said we use the biolog place, I'm presenting results from the what's called the average wall color development. So this is just a standardized measure of how much absorbance, because it's spectrophotometry, so you're measuring the rate of color development over 4 days. I did it for over 4 days. So the rate of color development is measured for each of the samples. And so for each plate, if you find the average, you can compare that average as one number for each sample. So that's what the average wall color development is. And that's controlled for the, that's corrected for the control, sorry. So what you can see here, the only interesting thing which I think I'm going to pursue further, because there's a lot more statistical analysis to be done on this data, but I just got the data and this is all I could bring with me. Annual ryegrass seemed to show, I'm trying to find the cursor, sorry. Okay. Annual ryegrass seemed to show significantly higher microbial diversity at both Elora in 2015 samples and at Ridgetown. So these were significantly different from the other samples. And a trend with red clover is that it's not too different from the control, and sometimes even significantly lower than the control in terms of the microbial diversity. I'm not sure why that is, but there seems to be a potential there with annual ryegrass in terms of improving the microbial diversity. So to conclude from our findings so far, we found that when you have cover crops successfully establishing, you have the potential to contribute significant amounts of carbon or nitrogen to the soil, because in our case, we are just terminating and leaving them on the surface, so all that biomass is contributed to the soil. And we could not detect any seasonal effects on the parameters that we measured, but I would like to believe that there was something happening in those soils, as shown by the correlation analysis that showed significant relationships between the cover crop biomass yield. Is something to be, you know, explored further, but I think if with more studies we could find that there are actually some effects of cover crops on dynamic soil properties. Maybe our sampling timing was wrong, or I don't know, I just like to be optimistic. And so with the community level physiological profiling, we also saw some potential for cover crops to actually be doing something to improve the diversity of soil microbes. This diversity is important for resilience, like I said when I was introducing my talk. Resilience is good. When you have microbial diversity, it means you have better chances of surviving extreme events like we had last year at Trent with the drought. I would like to thank you for listening to me, and to thank everyone who contributed to the success of the project and the funding agencies. And I would like to invite questions at this time.